It's Ask the Governor, in depth with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Now, live from the Glass and Close Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Governor Northam is in the studio. We are ready for another edition of Ask the Governor on WTOP. Here's how you can join our conversation during the course of the next hour. The phone number to call is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can also submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question at WTOP.com. And again, this month, you can watch the program live on Facebook. Facebook Live, you can also submit a question through Facebook as well. Governor Northam, welcome back.
Hello, Governor.
Thank you all for having me. I hope your all's bracket is doing better than mine.
We heard about your bracket.
Yes.
It was a nice choice.
Well, we had three Virginia teams, and I put my efforts behind all three. I picked UVA to be playing Virginia Tech in the final game, and it just didn't work for me this year. So maybe next year.
It was a tough first round for you, wasn't it?
Yes,
and for Mark Lewis as well.
Yeah. All right.
But thanks for picking the Hoos anyway.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate it. Hope you enjoy your prize from the North Carolina governor. At least you got something.
You know,
for the ACC tournament.
We did win that bet, but I haven't seen it come into Richmond. So we're maybe it's in the mail, as they say.
Yes. All right.
Any day now.
We'll see what we can do to help you out with
thank
that.
Thank you for that.
A lot of issues to discuss here this morning, Governor. We're going to start with Metro funding.
Yes.
This continues to be a ball that bounces around, and it seems that each time we make a step forward, there may be a pause in the action or perhaps even a step back. The transit agency, of course, needs a dedicated source of funding, and a compromise worked out in the House of Delegates in Virginia, and the state Senate found Virginia's share of $154 million. Maryland's lawmakers, they've now agreed to allocate the full share, $167 million, after balking initially at that amount. We weren't sure if they were going to approve the full amount, but they have done so. D.C.'s mayor has pledged the full amount of funding from the funding formula from the city. But now a number of regional leaders and transportation officials and business leaders, as you know, have raised a number of concerns about what the General Assembly in Virginia approved, and they feel it could rob local transportation projects of critical funding that they need. Want to get your thinking of where things stand now on this important issue. Is it an either-or proposition, really, for Metro? Are we looking at the only way to get dedicated funding for the transit agency is to take money away from other transportation projects?
No, it's not an either-or. And, you know, first of all, I'd like to say that, you know, the Metro is vitally important to our economy here in Northern Virginia and Washington and Maryland. And, you know, I appreciate the General Assembly taking a step forward. Virginia was the first one at the table to have $154 million, which was our share of the $500 million, which is needed for the dedicated source of revenue. And so, you know, as we say, there are a lot of ways to skin a cat, and we have a plan on the table now that, you know, does take funding from the Transportation Authority. I have talked to a lot of the local leaders here in Northern Virginia. They obviously have concerns with that, as do I. And so we're having discussions and negotiations, and we have reconvened session, which will be on April the 18th. And so, you know, I have a couple more weeks to discuss with these folks and make sure that we come up with a plan that hopefully everybody will be content with. So I'm looking forward to that.
You have indicated on a number of occasions that you have some amendments that you want to offer, but we haven't heard a lot of detail about that. Are you prepared to talk about that today? Can you tell us what some of those changes might be?
Well, obviously, you know, the Senate had a plan that looked at the occupancy tax, recordation taxes, and those were things that were actually voted on back in 2013. And so, you know, we have a lot of options on the table right now. And again, we're having negotiations, discussions, and I think that at the end of the day, we'll have a plan. We will have our share, which is $154 million of dedicated source of revenue for Metro, and hopefully it will be something that everybody will be content with.
You're listening to Ask the Governor on WTOP Radio. We have Virginia Governor Ralph Northam in the studio with us. NBC4's Julie Carey also alongside. She'll have questions as we work through the hour, and we'll be getting to your questions as well on the phone and from Twitter and from Facebook. Here's how to call in to Ask the Governor a question, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Tweet a question using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question at WTOP.com and again on Facebook Live.
And Governor, we continue to talk about the Metro funding plan. As you know, the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, other Northern Virginia elected officials are strongly opposed to diverting funding that was supposed to be used for roads instead for Metro. And we heard from Supervisor John Cook, who put it this way.
If you had sat down in January and said, let's write a bill that meets Metro's needs, but does it in the way that hurts local government in Northern Virginia the most, and does the absolute minimum from the state, you would come up with something very similar to what's on his desk now.
How do you respond to that?
Well, I'm sensitive to that. And again, as we said earlier, that there are a number of projects that need to be built here in Northern Virginia, and we have the Transportation Authority funding to do that. And so we have to be very careful taking resources away from that to pay for Metro. I think that there's already a lot of state money that comes into the Metro system, and I think people need to be aware of that. But this is something that it's not only important to the economy of Northern Virginia, it's important to the economy of all of Virginia. And so we've had those discussions. And again, I understand his comments, and I am sensitive to those. I'm going to meet with Chairwoman Bulova a little bit later today, and we're going to have further discussions. And again, I'm confident that we can come up with a plan that will fund Metro and that will take some of the pressure off of the Transportation Authority.
Now, when you talk about how critical Metro is for the entire state's economy, it begs the question, why isn't there more state money involved in Virginia's funding formula? It seems that so much of the revenue that is being dedicated to Metro is coming from money that is from Northern Virginia already.
Yes, well, as I said earlier, there is state funding that supports Metro, millions of dollars, but it's a discussion that we have in Richmond oftentimes, and I'll use the analogy of the ports. I mean, we had legislators from other parts of the state saying, why should we out in the southwest or the south side of Virginia support the Port of Virginia? And it's the same argument. It's not only important for Hampton Roads, it's important for all of Virginia. So, I think hopefully I can provide the leadership that can communicate that concept. But also we have to have, I think, our legislators from here in Northern Virginia really emphasizing to the legislators from the other parts of the Commonwealth that this is not only about Northern Virginia, it's about all of Virginia, and we need to all be at the table and work through this together.
You think it's a losing proposition with lawmakers to go back to them and say we need more state money in this equation?
No, it's not a losing proposition, and again, I'm in the middle of those discussions and negotiations, and we're kind of looking at all of the above right now, and again, I think we'll come up with a plan that everybody will be content with.
All right, Governor, we're going to move on to the issue of guns and,
yes,
and the fight that we saw last weekend for stricter gun legislation. Hundreds of thousands descending upon D.C. last weekend in support of the Florida students, basically, who want lawmakers to hear their pleas for stricter gun laws. We have some questions for you about gun policy and, of course, about school safety. And I'm going to start right off the bat with a question on our Facebook page from Lisa, who asks, can you share what you're doing to increase safety in Virginia schools? There's obviously a lot of discussion about arming teachers. What are some of the alternatives for schools, and what is it that you're looking at?
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the question. I was here on Saturday for the march. I actually met that morning during a breakfast with students from Parkland, Florida, and their families, and actually some of the physicians were here as well that had taken care of those individuals. A couple of them are still in wheelchairs. And I would just invite anybody out there that doesn't believe in responsible gun ownership to talk to some of these students, to talk to their families and really get a feel for what they've been going through. And, we as a society need to stand up and say enough is enough. And I commend all of these young individuals that have become vocal as they say, why are we having to be so vocal for something that our leaders should be taking care of, but they have fallen short. And so the answer to her question, first of all, we want our schools to be safe. We have a very good threat assessment program in Virginia. We want to make sure that we fund resource officers at schools. I I'm an educator. I teach at the medical school in Norfolk. My wife is a K-5 educator. I feel very strongly that we're not educators to enforce the law. So I would never want to encourage teachers being armed. I just think that's a terrible idea. And so we want to make sure that we are doing what we can to make our schools safe. We're doing that in Virginia. But the other thing I would say is that we need to talk about common sense gun legislation. And I introduced several pieces of legislation at the beginning of this previous session to ban bump stocks. We don't need automatic weapons on our streets. I put in legislation to promote universal background checks, to ban these weapons of war. And every piece of legislation that I introduced was defeated the first morning that I took office, even before I gave my State of the Commonwealth address. So I encourage folks, not only these teenagers, but also their families, to continue to be vocal, to continue this energy, to reach out to legislators and demand that they do something to make our streets, our communities, our schools, our movie theaters, our malls, our concert venues, to make these safer so that we don't have any more of these horrific tragedies in Virginia.
Governor, we know none of the gun reform legislation passed out of the 2018 General Assembly. After the show last month, you and I were talking. Yeah. You said you were still working behind the scenes to see if you could find some common ground on some kind of gun violence prevention legislation. What's happened on that front? And, you know, can you, will you hand down a bill during the special session? Is that a possibility?
Julie, it's certainly an option. I've had discussions with people on both sides of the aisle. It's a difficult discussion in Virginia, but one that is very, very important, as I just alluded to. Right now, I've got the legislators coming back on April the 11th. We desperately need to get a budget in place. I want a budget that expands health care, that gives coverage to up to 400,000 working Virginians, that brings back about $5 million a day that we could be using on higher education, K-12, giving our law enforcement agents a raise. So that's my top priority right now, is to get that taken care of. And then I think after that is tucked in, if you will, then we'll continue to have the discussion on how we promote responsible gun ownership in Virginia.
All right, Governor, we'll be back with more questions. Ask the Governor continues on WTOP.
Back with Ask the Governor here on WTOP, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam joining us in the studio until 11 o'clock this morning. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. You can send us your question on Twitter using hashtag AskThe, or pose a question at WTOP.com. And again, this month, you can like us on Facebook and watch the show on Facebook Live. Governor, we're going to go right to the phones, and you'll need your headphones for that. So we'll get through a couple of questions here if we can. Robin is calling in from Woodbridge with a question for the governor. Robin, what's your question?
Hello, Governor. Pleasure to meet you. I have a question. With over 40,000 deaths on the highway and 6,000 of those deaths related to pedestrians and cyclists, I wanted to know, what is your office doing as far as working with universities or pilot programs to help curb those fatalities that are occurring for pedestrians and cyclists?
Robin, thank you for the question. And we have had legislation over the years. As you know, I've been in the Senate for 6 years and then served as lieutenant governor for four. And simple things like opening a car door when there are biking lanes nearby. One of the largest challenges I believe we have, Robin, is still with distracted drivers. And we continue to introduce and pass legislation that cracks down on texting and using cell phones. So we have really tried to promote handheld units so that the distractions will be less. But to your point, we all have to be cognizant that we all share the road, and whether that be pedestrians or bicyclists, we need to be aware of that and make sure that we're doing things as safely as we can. And I like your idea of working with our colleges and universities, even our K-12 schools, to get ideas from individuals of how we could make things safer. But certainly, if you have any ideas, Robin, we work for you, and we'd be more than willing to hear of your suggestions of how we can make our streets safer for everyone out there.
And because we're on multimedia platforms here, we're going to take another question, this one from Facebook. Gia writes in, there's a serious nursing shortage and insufficient numbers of healthcare workers nationwide, including Virginia. And Gia would like to know, what are you looking at to prevent a looming crisis?
Gia, thank you for your question. And this all boils down to workforce development. And whether it be a tech company or a hospital or whatever, we need to make sure that we communicate with the business community and have that open communication between the businesses and our education system. And, you know, as I've said all along, with urgency, we really need to open up the pipeline for training for 21st century jobs. And, you know, you've probably heard me say this before, but we talk about STEM. I've added a couple letters, science, technology, engineering, the arts, math, and healthcare. And that last H is for healthcare. And to your point, we do have a tremendous shortage not only of nurses, but of technicians, lab technicians, radiology technicians. And so we need to work with our education systems and make sure that we're training enough individuals that can fill those slots. And, you know, one of the things that I like to remind people, Gia, is that we have an opportunity to bring resources from Washington back to Virginia through expanding healthcare for up to 400,000 working Virginians. And those are resources. Right now, we have a contrast between the House budget and the Senate budget of over $400 million. And that $400 million could be used for higher education, for training more nurses, medical students, doctors. It could be also used for K through 12 education, and finally for raises for our teachers and law enforcement. So it's very important that I hope you will reach out to your legislators and let them know the importance of its expanding coverage and bringing those resources back to Virginia.
Governor, you've touched on Medicaid expansion and the challenges of coming to a conclusion with the budget a couple of times. So we want to zero in on that for just a couple of minutes before we get to traffic. We know the Senate has opposed Medicaid expansion. The House supported it. Lawmakers need to approve a state budget by July 1st in order to avoid a state government shutdown. They'll be back next month for a special session. What's your level of confidence that you can accomplish in a few days in the special session what was unable to be accomplished during 60 days of the regular session? And do you have some Republican senators that you can pull over? Because you only need a couple of votes, I believe, in the Senate to get Medicaid expansion. Have you been working some arm twisting there to pull a few people in?
Well, Mark, we were very pleased, and I tried to bring in a bipartisan leadership into Richmond this year, and we've gotten some good things done with criminal justice reform. As we talked about earlier, we have now a dedicated source of revenue for Metro. We've worked on some regulatory reform in a bipartisan way, but the most important bill, which is the budget bill, we didn't get accomplished, and I'm disappointed over that. And the reason that we didn't is because the House, which has done courageous work, great work on their side, has put expansion into the budget. A difference, as I said earlier, over $400 million between their budget and the Senate budget. So I have invited the legislators to come back to Richmond on April the 11th, and I have encouraged them that we need a budget that works for all of Virginians. We also need a budget that helps our local government, our education systems, and also our AAA bond rating. It is very, very important that we complete a budget as soon as we can so that we can maintain in Virginia our AAA bond rating. So yes, I'm continuing to negotiate with senators and House members on both sides of the aisle. I don't know if you'd call it arm twisting, but we've also encouraged your listeners to reach out to their legislators and let them know how important this budget is and how important health care is to 400,000 working Virginians and the availability of bringing those resources back to Virginia. Very, very important. And I remind people, Mark, all the time, any business that says it's a good idea to give their competitors over $5 million a day, I remind them as a neurologist, they should have their heads examined. Mm-hmm. So we need to bring those resources back to Virginia.
We're going to talk about FBI headquarters, Amazon proposal for a second headquarter in Virginia, all of that and more on the budget coming up.
Back on Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, taking your phone calls and questions. 877-336-1035 is the number to call. You can submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe. If you're online on our website, you can pose a question there at WTOP.com. We'll get it. Or if you like us on Facebook, watch the program live on Facebook Live. We'll take your question there as well for Governor Northam. Governor, we were just talking before the break about the special session of the General Assembly next month, trying to come up with a budget deal, and you're hoping that you will get the votes you need to pass Medicaid expansion. I know you have resubmitted a budget plan to lawmakers for their consideration when they return for the special session. It's the same budget plan that they've seen before, the one that Governor McAuliffe submitted before leaving office. Why resubmit that same budget? Does it take us back to the starting point? Does it advance the process? And why is there no mention of the requirement that many Republicans want for Medicaid expansion, which is a work requirement?
Well, it is the same budget, Mark, with one exception, which is an amendment I put on that I wanted to make clear is that any revenue that came into the state in the next few months will be put into our rainy day fund so that we shore that up and make sure that that we do protect our AAA bond rating. The other reason I did it, Mark, is just I wanted to make it as straightforward as I could. I didn't want to complicate the issue and kind of leave on the table the budget that we introduced back in December. That's what we negotiated from, and obviously those negotiations will continue. I'll work with both the House and the Senate. I mean, we've talked about Medicaid reform, things like our work search program that helps individuals get back into the workforce, also incentivizing good health. So I'm ready and willing to work with both the House and the Senate to get back to where we were and perhaps take it farther and come up with a budget that, again, will work for all of Virginia.
So for those who aren't familiar with the legislative process, this doesn't, by starting with the original document where the session began, this doesn't take us back to the beginning. What about all of the work that's been done and during the session?
And that work is continuing. So none of that has been taken off the table. So, I think we were in a very good place at the end of the session. The mm-hmm. House, as I said earlier, stepped up to the plate, and we had great negotiations, tough negotiations, and we're in a place that I think was good for Virginia. And now we just need to encourage the Senate to come on board with our plan.
Julie, you have a question?
Yeah, Governor. You know, before the 2018 session, much to the dismay of some Democrats, you rejected the idea of trying to lure a House or Senate Republican onto your cabinet in order to improve your chances of passing critical legislation like Medicaid expansion. So given the difficulty of getting an agreement on Medicaid expansion, and when you look at how far apart the House and Senate are, how much do you now regret not making that move or not trying to make that move?
Yeah, I don't regret it, Julie. And, you know, I didn't come to Richmond to play politics. And, you know, these senators and House members were elected by the voters. And I wanted to keep them in the job that they were elected for. So I haven't played games. I have been very straightforward. And I've just really tried to emphasize to both the House and the Senate the importance of individuals having access to health care and bringing those resources back to Virginia. So I think they respect that. They know I've been straightforward with our approach. And we're continuing our talks. And I'm confident that in the near future, we're going to have a budget that works for all of Virginia.
Governor, I want to ask you about FBI headquarters.
Yeah.
When President Trump signed the new spending bill passed by Congress, one of the provisions included in that bill effectively banned the federal government from spending money to rebuild the FBI headquarters on the existing D.C. campus of the J. Edgar Hoover building. Mm-hmm. Well, now, last year, the General Services Administration cited insufficient funding from Congress to move out of the district to any of the finalist sites in Virginia or Maryland, and they said the FBI would rebuild at its current site. This change has members of Congress from Virginia and Maryland sort of up in arms. Northern Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly even requesting an investigation now from the Inspector General. So I guess the question is, after years of looking at this and millions of dollars that have been spent, what are you hearing about the status of the new FBI headquarters?
Well, the same that you just, repeated, Debbie. And, you know, we have put a lot of effort, a lot of financial resources into looking at moving the FBI to Virginia, and then all of a sudden the current administration has just pulled the rug out from under us. And so I think that's very short-sighted, and I regret that that's happened. And again, this is time and money for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we just don't like the way that it's been dealt with.
Is Virginia and Maryland cooperating on this to try to get this project back on track? What happens from here going forward?
You know, I haven't spent a lot of energy on it. I've just been looking at the news like you have, and we've got other things that we're working on. But I will, if Marilyn is willing to relook at that, I'll be glad to do it with them.
Governor, we're going to have to take a break for traffic and weather. When we come back, there are a number of folks from Arlington who have some questions for you about a particular issue this morning, and we'll be getting to their concerns right after traffic and weather. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, taking your questions at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. If you're listening through WTOP.com, you can certainly ask a question there as well, or submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or you can also submit a question through Facebook with Facebook Live broadcasting the show this morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Governor, there's a bill up for your consideration that would force Arlington County to change the way it assesses property taxes on two exclusive golf courses. And that change would cost the county about $1.5 million a year in tax revenue. We're going to go to the phones, line four. We're speaking with Annette from Arlington, who has a question about this legislation. Go ahead, Annette.
Yes, Governor. My question is, do you think real estate tax assessments should be established by local elected officials with disputes resolved in the courts, or should they be imposed upon by state legislators with disputes resolved by those state legislators who were not elected by the locality?
Annette, thank you for the question, and you seem to have a good grasp of what we're dealing with right now. As you know, the tax assessments on the two golf courses are high, and we are having discussions with the local leaders, in this case from Arlington. You know, I don't think the state needs to get involved at the local level. This is something that Arlington leadership should deal with these golf courses, and I have asked them to do just that. As you know, we have a few weeks left before April the 11th, which is, April 11th is when we come back for reconvene, but April 18th is the reconvene session where we will either have amendments or vetoes. But I have asked them to work this out so that we don't have this as an issue. But to your question and to your point, I have a lot of concerns when the state gets involved at the local level, and I think this is a case of that, and I would just as soon not have to do that.
So will you... sorry.
We're all thinking the same thing.
All three of us are going to ask the same
Sounds like you're leaning toward a veto.
Well, we're having discussions. And as I just said, I have asked them to resolve this. They have a couple weeks to do that at the local level. And if they can't, then I will have to step in and take action. But I think this is a local issue.
Meaning that you will veto the bill if it doesn't come to a compromise.
We're still having those discussions.
Governor, are there members of the affected golf courses who are lawmakers in the General Assembly who voted in favor of this bill? Any conflict of interest here?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but something that I am sensitive to, a lot of these members are veterans. And, you know, our veterans obviously have protected our lives and have limited resources. And so the memberships, I think, have gotten fairly unreasonable. And so that's why this needs to be addressed.
Before we go away from that, though, Governor, I mean, how would you be able to adjust this legislation and still satisfy Arlington County elected officials who say, you know, it should be their purview to decide about taxes? I don't see the ground for compromise that you're speaking of.
Yeah, so in other words, I understand your question. It's kind of an all or none thing. And you may be right. This may not be something that we can really amend. So if the local leadership is unable to resolve this, then, you know, I will have to take action.
Governor, I want to ask you about another bill. This is one where you have already signed. Virginians are now legally able to get a form of medical marijuana, cannabis oil, for the treatment of any medically diagnosed condition or disease. Prior to this bill, cannabis oil was only allowed to treat a form of epilepsy that is nearly drug resistant. Under the bill that you have signed earlier this month, Virginia doctors, as I understand, will be able to determine if cannabis oil could benefit patients who have other medical issues. Virginia lawmakers have appeared resistant on marijuana-related issues for some time. What do you think has turned the tide now?
Well, there was a lot of advocacy from constituents across the Commonwealth, and it started, as you said, with mothers and fathers of children that had intractable epilepsy, and that's something that I was involved in as a neurologist. And so we took that a step further this year and gave providers the option of using cannabidiol oil for other medical conditions. And so, you know, one of the things that we talked about, Mark, this past year, and it didn't happen, was to decriminalize or look at decriminalizing marijuana in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that would allow us to really look at data. There are potential uses of marijuana for a lot of other medical conditions. And one of the handicaps we've had, because marijuana is a Schedule I medication or drug, we've been unable to study it and get the data that we need. So we would ask for the federal government to change the schedule of marijuana so that we can do the research that we need. And then I think it would open it up to a lot of other uses. The other thing that I would say, as far as decriminalizing marijuana in Virginia, you know, there are a lot of lives that are ruined by making mistakes and being put in jail. And there's a discrepancy between whether African-Americans get arrested versus Caucasians. So a lot of inequities there. So for a lot of those reasons, we need to look at this criminal justice reform. And so part of that package was to look at decriminalizing marijuana, and we weren't able to get that done. But to your point, there are many potential uses for marijuana in the medical arena, and we want to make sure that we have those available in Virginia.
On the decriminalization issue, how much do you think you moved the needle during this session? Is that something that you'll come back to next year?
Absolutely. That's something that I ran on in 2017, and there were actually some folks on both sides of the aisle that were discussing it, but it didn't happen. But we'll continue to pursue that as we move forward.
Governor, since we last saw you, officials from Amazon have now toured some sites in D.C., Montgomery County, and Northern Virginia as it considers adding a second headquarters, potentially bringing up to 50,000 jobs to the area. We understand you had breakfast with some Amazon officials. What can you tell us about that day? What are their concerns? And does Virginia have the workforce to fill all of those positions?
Well, I was pleased to be able to just have a breakfast meeting with folks from Amazon and welcome them to the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I think to your point, whether it's Amazon or any other company, there are a couple of things that we really need to focus on here in Virginia. And you mentioned one of them, and that's workforce development. Any business that wants to grow in Virginia or come to Virginia needs to know that we can train their future workforce. And those are those high-tech jobs that I mentioned earlier, the STEAM-H-related jobs. The other thing that I think is very relevant to companies that want to come to Virginia, especially Northern Virginia, is transportation. And so that's why I was so pleased, and I worked very hard with our legislators from both sides of the aisle to find this dedicated source of revenue for Metro. So all of these things are very important to companies, and certainly Amazon is one of them.
Back for the final segment of Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, who's with us until 11 o'clock this morning. 877-336-1035 is the number to call. You can submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or you can post a question on our website at WTOP.com or follow along and ask a question on Facebook Live.
Governor, recently you endorsed Democratic State Senator Jennifer Wexton in the party's nomination to challenge Republican Congresswoman yes. Barbara Comstock. This is a very hotly contested, widely watched House race, anticipated to be one of the most competitive midterm races this year. Wexton is one of seven Democrats, as you know, running in the primary, which is going to be held on June 12th. Tell us why you threw your support behind Wexton as opposed to any of the other Democrats running.
Well, it's a very important seat, and we have a number of them up in Virginia this year, the congressional seats. And obviously we have Senator Tim Kaine running for re-election, who's just a wonderful leader. You know, I think we have a great chance to pick up that seat. And I have worked with Jennifer in the Senate. As you know, I was in the Senate for 6 years and then served as lieutenant governor for four. So I have a very close relationship with Jennifer. I've watched her work. I think she's very effective, and I think she's the best person for that particular position.
Congresswoman Comstock obviously has deep coffers, formidable party support. She's considered a hefty fundraiser. State Senator Wexton not exactly the top fundraiser among the other candidates. How difficult will it be for this Democratic nominee to run against Congresswoman Comstock? And why do you think your support might help turn this seat?
Well, you know, I just came off of a campaign in 2017, and I listened to a lot of voters across the Commonwealth. You know, the voters out there, they want a job that they can support themselves and their families with. They want world-class education for their children. They want access to affordable and quality health care. They want to live in environments where the air and water are clean, want to live in safe communities where there are not guns on every street corner, and they want to live in a Commonwealth that's inclusive, where we welcome people to the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I think that Jennifer stands for all of these things, and this is, as I said earlier, an important seat. She's a tremendous leader, and I think she's in a good position to win that seat.
Governor, I want to touch on a proposal that President Trump recently rolled out to attack the nation's opioid crisis. He outlined more federal dollars for prevention and education, but he also called for the death penalty to punish some drug dealers, saying if we don't get tough on drug dealers, we are wasting our time. As we have discussed before, every governor battling this epidemic in their state. What's your reaction to the president's plan overall, and do you support his proposal of the death penalty for certain drug dealers?
Well, absolutely not, and it's just more of his rhetoric. But, you know, what we need to focus on, Mark, is how we prevent individuals from being addicted, and then those that unfortunately are addicted, how we get them the treatment that they need. So, you know, obviously we want to be tough on crime, but just talking about imposing the death penalty is not going to solve our opioid crisis in Virginia.
What role do you think the federal government needs to play here in assisting the states? And what do you need that you don't have right now at the state level?
Well, there are a couple of things, Mark. One is interstate doctor shopping. As you know, in the southwest of Virginia, we're surrounded by five other states. So we have asked from help from the federal agents to nip that in the bud. The other thing is resources. And I remind people all the time there are consequences to limited resources and to help prevent individuals from being addicted, to get out and educate our providers, to work with law enforcement, to work with mental health agencies, our community service boards. Mm-hmm. All of these things require resources. So any help that the federal government can give us is greatly appreciated. And also it's another reason to expand health care in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Those, you know, that $421 million that we talked about earlier, that could be used to help with the opioid crisis. So we don't want to be in a position where we're leaving money on the table.
We've heard a lot about retraining medical professionals about prescribing opioids.
Yes.
Looking at alternatives, for example, or only prescribing opioids in limited amounts for
yes.
just a few number of days. How important do you think that is, and how much of a difference will it make?
It's very important, Mark. And one of the things that I want to do as a physician, I go around the country. I've lectured in the past on concussions, but I'm going to change my theme a little bit in the next couple of years and start lecturing at our medical schools, doing grand rounds and talking about more innovative ways of treating both acute and chronic pain. And one of the things that you just mentioned, if an individual is genetically predisposed to being addicted, we know that after 5 or 6 days of exposure to a narcotic, that it's too late. And so we've looked at legislation not giving more than, for example, a 7-day supply of narcotics. So there are a lot of things that we need to focus on in Virginia in prevention. And as you've heard folks say before, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's really where the rubber meets the road. And obviously, we want to help individuals that are addicted. But once an individual's addicted, it's very difficult to reverse that.
We've got less than a minute left. Let's go to line 6 and talk to Aaron from Arlington. Aaron's been holding for a while. What's your question quickly, Aaron?
Hey, Governor, real fast. I'm doing some policy paper, and I'm doing it on Virginia's Department of Correction. Within the last year, the government increased it by $12 million, and Virginia's ranked third lowest in the nation for violent crimes, but we still are ranked one of the highest for our Department of Corrections and our incarceration rate. I just want to know what type of plans you have to help the taxpayers stop overpaying for state-run facilities for nonviolent criminals.
Aaron, thank you very much. And I think going back to the prevention, we want to do everything that we can to help individuals, to help them in the workforce, to make sure that they don't end up in our jails and penitentiaries. But what if they do, we want to reach out to them, talk about workforce, make sure they have access to good health care. And when they are released from a jail or prison. We want them to be able to enter society. We want their to have their voting rights restored and want them to be able to get back into the workforce. So a lot of good things are happening to prevent the recidivism rates that we're still seeing in Virginia.
Governor, that'll have to be the final word for this month. We appreciate you coming back. Best of luck to you and the legislators next month in working out a budget deal. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's just a great opportunity for me to reach out and let our voters know what's going on in Richmond. So thank you all so much.
Thanks, Governor. Hope Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. We'll see you next month.
Take care.